Welcome to Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine's podcast series. Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine is a monthly magazine publishing original crime and mystery stories. I'm Linda Landrigan, editor of the magazine. Each month we podcast a reading of a story from our archives. This month, Molly McRae reads her story, Fandango by Flashlight, from our December 2005 issue. The main characters of this story, bookstore proprietor Margaret and her sister Bitsy, also appear in Molly McRae's new novel, Law and Order, which will be published later this year by Five Star. Molly McRae is also the author of the novel, Wilder Rumors, set in the foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains of Tennessee.
What in heaven's name was he doing here? Bitsy, my one and only sister, knows how to make an entrance. She snapped the door shut, she on the inside, the object of her scorn now ambling off down the street. I mean, really, Margaret, Ed Tidwell of all people. Ed's all right, I said. He needs to be fumigated. She looked around my bookstore with narrowed eyes, calculating my own fumigation needs. Even on its worst days, my place doesn't deserve to be lumped in with Ed Tidwell and his eccentric hygiene. But I've been on an extreme cleaning kick lately, so I let the books standing at attention on their dust-free shelves and the glowing floors testify for themselves. Bitsy had to settle for glaring at me instead. I tucked stray hair behind my ear. He has some books he wants me to look at, I said. I couldn't help smiling. And you actually think Ed has anything that can possibly be worth looking at? Can't help it, Bitsy. I have to look. My sister, the bibliopholic. Trust me, anything Ed touches is likely to turn into something best described as ew. Speaking of ew, I said, going for distraction as a way of muting further unpleasant observations about my customers rather than the roll of duct tape my fingers were itching to apply. You know that Zudu elephant Leona gave me for the front garden? It's gone. She looked out the window. As a member of the garden club, it tries Betsy's soul to acknowledge the meager patch I call a garden. She turned back to me with a mixture of patience and condescension, playing a game of tag across her face. Zudu sculptures are supposed to disappear, Margaret. That's the whole point of making them out of compressed dung. The sculptures are naturally time-released fertilizer. But Leona only gave it to me 2 days ago. Oh. Well, there have been a number of letters to the editor recently about flower arrangements at the cemetery disappearing. Supposedly, they've blown away. Mission accomplished. I had no idea what connection she saw between wind-tossed flowers at the cemetery and my Zudu elephant, but at least she was no longer maligning my customers front, center, and in full voice. I try to keep my sister's opinions and my business separate, though it isn't always easy. But, to be honest, I did agree with her about the dim chance of Ed Tidwell having any books worth looking at. Ed says he retired a few years ago. By retired, he means that he quit showing up at the garage where he worked only haphazardly to begin with. He also quit cutting his hair, or shaving, or bathing regularly. He keeps himself together, doing odd jobs around town. Two things I've learned over the years in the book business, though. You never know what you'll find in the most unlikely places, and never judge a customer by his or her cover. And I like Ed. Mostly if I'm upwind of him, but he's one of the world's gentle souls. Blown away, you say? Imagine that. So, Bitsy, what can I do for you? My sister might be opinionated, what some people prefer to call rude and overbearing, but at least she buys and reads books. Actually, you must be rubbing off on me. I couldn't help myself, and I had to come visit our little book. The little book she referred to might break her toe were I to drop a copy on it. It's a pictorial history of Stonewall, a volume long out of print and recently back in print, thanks to the Stonewall Historical Society. When Bitsy isn't gardening, she's busy being historical. They did a nice job on it, I said. Didn't they? She gushed. She was stroking one of the burgundy covers as she might a cat. I really must be rubbing off on her. So come on, tell me, how many have you sold? You're looking at what's left. You've sold all five? Six. We looked at the stack of books, which refused, no matter how hard I stared at it, to be more than five. I know where the other one's gone, Bitsy said, looking pleased. Three guesses, and they all end in ew. Ed didn't take it. Of course he took it. Think about it, Margaret. Since when does Ed Tidwell read, much less collect books anyway? Where do you think he got the ones he wants you to fence for him? He's selling them for someone who's moving. Ha! And if you believe that, you're a fool. Bitsy, he just dances to a different fiddler. So tell me who else took it. Who else has been here in the store this morning? She made a show of peering around at the general lack of customers. Face it, Margaret. And I bet you something else, too. Ed's the one who took your zoodoo. He certainly smells like it. I teetered at the brink of a satisfying response, but the bell over the door had jingled halfway through Bitsy's remarks, and it is true that there are pleasures best not mixed with business. I pulled myself together, ignored Bitsy, and smiled at Nilda, a good and frequent customer. She waved and headed for the other room. I turned back to Bitsy. Have fun sniffing out any treasures amongst Ed's books, Margaret. Hope you don't catch anything if you get too close. I almost heaved a copy of the pictorial history at her, but she was already sailing out the door. I've got a good arm, and could probably still have winged her, but Nilda was back with a stack of paperbacks. Being the slave to customer service that I am, I settled for a discreetly belligerent sigh. That was quick, Nilda, I said. Oh, no, hon. I brought these in here for trade. I didn't want to interrupt you when I came in and saw you with your customer, and if you don't mind my saying so, that woman had a bee up her nose. If I'd been you, I'd have thrown something at her. I laughed. I should hire you as the bookstore bouncer, Nilda. Why, does she bother you often? About every day of my life. Nilda looked nonplussed. That was my sister, I explained. Oh, well. A flip of her wrist dismissed Bitsy. No need to tell me how that goes, hon. I've got six of them myself. You get the seven of us together plus the five brothers, and there's no telling what we're likely to stir up, I tell you that. Now, I'll get out of your hair while you figure up my credit. I'll be back there in the cookbooks. Nilda brings me nice books. Their spines aren't broken, and they don't smell of cigarette smoke, or anything else they shouldn't. She's also happy to take trade credit for them to spend in the store on more books to feed her own habit. She's only been in town a few months, but ours has become a mutually beneficial relationship. The door jingled again, and my elderly cousin Leona tottered in. A shot of bookstore gossip is part of her morning routine. She pauses outside to deadhead the flowers I neglect for her benefit, then fusses her way inside to find out if I've heard anything new, or to set me straight if I get it wrong. Margaret, dear, the cosmos are looking much perkier this morning. That zoodoo is a remarkable product. I wonder if they use 100% elephant dung, or if they mix in other species. Gazelle, for instance. And would that be an improvement? Or do they even know? Perhaps I'll offer to do a controlled study for them. How are you, dear? Perhaps not as perky as the cosmos, but, Cousin Leona, I have bad news about the zoodoo. It's missing. Nonsense, dear. You've just misplaced it. I haven't moved it. Have you looked in the hydrangeas? I don't have hydrangeas. Honestly, Leona, I haven't touched it. Bitsy thinks it was stolen. Does she? Leona considered this. She could be right, dear. There's been a rash of petty thefts at the cemetery. Bitsy said that was the wind. The breezes we've been having could hardly blow away something the general size and weight of a chocolate chihuahua, dear. She stopped and looked pensive. Did I say chocolate chihuahua? Yes, though I didn't like to draw attention to it. Don't be silly, dear. What I meant to say was concrete chihuahua. Why are we even talking about chihuahuas? Because of the angels, Margaret. Do pay attention. They aren't terribly big, and apparently some people like to put them at gravesides, along with their flower arrangements. Only, for some reason, they've always struck me as looking more like chihuahuas. The point is, she said with a rap of her knuckles on the counter, because I started snickering, they're being stolen, those and the silly garden gnomes that Bud Bowman put in the traffic island over on Maple. And you think there's a connection between missing angels, garden gnomes, and my zoodoo elephant? Not necessarily, dear. I just find it interesting. Why, for instance, take the gnomes from the traffic island on Maple, and not the far more appealing turtles from the city garden on Logan? They're cast iron and pretty heavy. Only the larger ones. The smaller ones are quite portable. Anyway, you should keep better track of your belongings, Margaret. My zoodoo elephant is right where it belongs, nestled in my nasturtiums. Well, I'm sorry mine is gone. She patted my hand and left, clucking something about the world and what it's coming to, especially in light of my keen interest in gardening. If Leona's wishes were hydrangeas, my interests in gardening might coincide. Nilda wandered out of the other room with a short stack of cookbooks. Her trade credit wasn't enough to cover the total. On other days when that happens, she's been quick to put some books back, but today she didn't seem to mind parting with a bit of cash to make up the difference. Her fingers did falter slightly with her wallet, and her parting smile was a tad sickly, but in general she appeared satisfied with her haul. The rest of the day went as my days tend to go. I operate for the most part in a pleasant haze of bookselling. Customers waxed and waned. I parted with 3 rolled doll first editions. I'd half planned to on adopting as my own. I turned them over to their new owner, one of those customers one occasionally finds standing as if in a stupor, stroking a book and cooing. How can that kind of passion be denied? It's certainly not within my power to do so. Leona called in the middle of the afternoon. "It's a poor joke, Margaret, if that's what you intended. I want my elephant back in my nasturtiums, where it belongs, immediately." She was using her knuckle-rapping voice. "Your elephant is missing, too? A very poor joke." "Cousin Leona, I didn't take your elephant. You know I wouldn't tease you like that." It took several minutes to unruffle her feathers, and thanks to Bitsy spreading her unpleasant opinions, it also took a promise to ask Ed Tidwell what he might know about pilfered pachyderms. I hated the thought of doing that. Ed is in the habit of calling me darlin' in such a sweet, old-fashioned way that he floats above suspicion in my book, and I take my books seriously. Leona's call reminded me of the missing copy of the pictorial history. More often than not, a missing book just turns out to be misplaced, especially a book full of nostalgia such as this one that invites people to sit in a quiet corner and pore over it. But I didn't spot the pictorial history anywhere as I straightened up around the store throughout the day. I don't get a lot of shoplifting, but it was beginning to look as though this book had walked out the door. Not with Ed, though, as Bitsy had insisted. And even Bitsy couldn't argue with my proof. She's right. Ed smells, and Ed's smell lingers longer than he does. I knew he hadn't taken the book this morning, and my nose knew he hadn't been in the store since before the pictorial history went on sale. Someone else had helped him or herself to it, and just as likely to a few other things I hadn't noticed yet. My appointment to look at Ed's books was for 7 that evening, giving me time to close up shop before driving out to the flea market on the 4-lane at the edge of town. The flea market is a year-round junk sale operated by whoever pays for floor space in a couple of barn-like metal buildings. The buildings are saunas in our humid East Tennessee summers and walk-in freezers in winter. Not an ideal environment for storing anything valuable, like the leather-bound books and vintage paperbacks Ed had described, but I hoped he was only storing them there temporarily. The market was closed for the night, but Ed had said some of the flea merchants might be there tending their stock. His battered pickup was in the gravel parking lot, along with a couple of other motley vehicles when I pulled in. One car, minus wheels and several windows, was up on cinder blocks, perhaps representing some of the quality merchandise available inside. Weeds encroached on the perimeter of the lot, blurring its edge in the gathering dusk. Some of the hardier specimens of chicory straggled up against the building, making a patchy, forlorn foundation planting. Near the door, the weeds gave up, abandoning the ground to drifts of cigarette butts and bits of old cellophane wrappers. But even the rust streaks on this tin can of a building couldn't dampen the flicker of excitement I always feel when on the hunt for books. "Are you coming in, darling? Are you just going to stand there with that mooncalf look on your face?" Ed pulled himself out of the shadows by the front door, startling me. "Sorry, Ed. Didn't mean to keep you waiting." He unlocked the door, and I couldn't help grinning as he held it for me. "Which booth is yours?" I asked. The venue might not be promising, but my fingers were tingling. "No booth. These books aren't for sale to just any old body. They're locked up safe in the back room. You ever been out here?" "No." "Well, we can't be having that now. We'll take the scenic route." He led me through a rat warren of knocked-together booths and folding tables. Half walls separated some spaces. Panels made of 2x4s and chicken wire separated others. We wound our way past odds and ends of furniture, racks of clothes, tables covered in flat cases crammed with earrings, watch fobs, bracelets, junk. My feet slowed at an alcove made of bookcases, but all I saw on the shelves were stacks of National Geographic and rows of Reader's Digest condensed books. I sighed and hurried after Ed, who'd almost disappeared around another bend. "Evening, Ed," I heard someone call from a distance. "You ever going to let me have a look at those books?" "You've already got enough." I caught up with him, but didn't see who he'd been answering. And that, he whispered, leaning in a little too close for olfactory comfort, is somebody these books for dang sure ain't for sale to, like as not rob me blind. He nodded a couple of times to seal his opinion. Have you ever seen any of these? He pointed out a contraption sitting next to a waffle iron. It looked like a Frankenstein-inspired pressure cooker. Sorry, I'm not much of a cook. Not that kind of cooking, darling, he cackled. It's a vulcanizer for rubber dentures. 100, maybe more, years old. Come on. As he set off again, the metal roof creaked. Wind, he said over his shoulder. The roof creaked again, and softly moaned as the wind found a way under the eaves. Then the lights flickered. You got spooks out here, Ed? She don't scare me none. As I was deciphering this remark, the lights went out altogether. Ow! Watch you don't bump into anything, darling. Thanks, I said, rubbing my shin. Ed, I can't see a thing. Is it the electricity? Maybe we should come back when it's back on. You still can't see my books, Nilda, he shouted, startling me. Then he muttered, it's not the electricity, darling. It's sour grapes. That woman won't give up. She flipped the lights on her way out, and tomorrow she'll pretend she forgot we were here. You're kidding. That was Nilda? She's like that? Much good'll do her. Come on. Ed, it's pitch black. But I've got a flashlight. Here. He proved it by shining it in my eyes, then held it out to me. You've probably got steadier hands. Now, let's cut to the chase. Come on over this way. The place was more claustrophobic by flashlight. But Ed abandoned the scenic route, and we threaded our way quickly to the back of the building. The roof continued to creak and pop as though settling in for the night. I kept my eyes on Ed's back and my bobbling pool of light. Shine it over here. He fumbled with a padlock, securing a hasp on a paint-deprived door. Padlock removed, he swung the door open, grabbed the flashlight from me, and played it over the room beyond. The smell alone broke my heart. It was a dungeon with books as derelict as dying prisoners. The room was dirty and damp, and there were probably silverfish sliding in and out of the musty pages. I might have sat down and cried if there'd been any place to sit other than on the drunken piles of mistreated books. I tried to pull myself together for Ed's sake, but he caught the expression on my face when he swung the flashlight my way. What's that mean, Margaret? Oh, Ed. But I've looked these things up on the internet, and I know they're worth a mint. Look here at this one. It's the first paperback edition of Cannery Row. He brushed grit off the cover and put it in my hand. It was sticky with mildew. Even with the damp, though, I knew if I tried to open it, the brittle cover would shatter. You're not really getting a good look at them, Margaret. I'll run go find the switch for the lights. No, Ed, really, I'm sorry. He was so earnest about the hoard, so sure they'd bring a fortune. I've known antiquarian book dealers who would have laid into him up one side and down the other over the abuse of the books. One old guy in Knoxville would have pelted him with them and then gone to find stones to finish the job properly. I was tempted just to take a shovel and bury the poor dead things. Well, hell, Margaret, he said, summing it up. Sorry, Ed, I said again. I handed the corpse of Cannery Row back to him and wiped my hands on my jeans, hoping I'd remember to run them through the washer about 10 times when I got home. Whose are they, by the way? Doesn't matter much, does it? Unless you're selling me a load of bull, you aiming to go behind my back, cut me out? No, Ed. Some would. Well... He shone the light around one more time, tossed the Steinbeck on the nearest heap, and heaved a sigh. I'm really sorry, Ed. So you said. You think if I put them out in the sun for a while, maybe dry them out in a slow oven? No. He grunted. Sorry. We started back to the front door, Ed hunched, shambling and dejected, me wondering why I couldn't think of anything more helpful to say than sorry. Whoa, sorry, Ed. I'd run smack into the smelly bulk of him when he stopped short. We untangled ourselves, and I was mildly amused to see him brush himself off. I forgot to lock up, he said. Wait here. I looked around at the dark shapes and darker shadows and listened to the roof noises and the wind under the eaves. I'll come with you, I called, hurrying after him. I was beginning to really dislike this place. At least he was conscientious. I'd just leave the door unlocked and hope someone would steal the whole sorry mess. We rounded a corner, and Ed stopped short again. By executing some fancy footwork, I avoided running into him this time. He looked unimpressed, but surprised me with a pirouette of his own, pulling me with him back around the corner. Shh, he said. There's someone there. He pulled me farther around the corner, into one of the alcoves, and sank to the floor. bed. It's probably just someone else Nilda left in the dark. Yeah, well, whoever it is in the back room, throwing the books around. Then let's tiptoe out of here and call the police. Let's call them right now. He pulled a cell phone out of a pocket. You've got a cell phone? It's the 21st century, Margaret. Sure, sorry. Here, hold the flashlight. Keep it low. Okay. Keep it low, but shine it over here so I can see to dial, okay? Sorry. But it's hard to see where you're pointing in the pitch black. Which is why you shine the light on me and not on whatever else distracts your wandering eye. Sorry. And stop, and I'll stop saying sorry. I waited 2 beats and added sorry, which gave me time while Ed muttered and swore to contemplate what I'd seen with when the flashlight strayed. Angels? And elephants. Ed, whose booth is this? By now he was whispering urgently into the phone, so I relegated him to the dark and flashed the light under the table we were crouching behind. What was all this stuff doing here? A gnome peeked out at me from between the wings of 2 angels, and a Zudu elephant, my Zudu elephant, sat in a nest of newspapers off in the corner. I knew it was mine because Leona's, complete with a lay of withered nasturtiums, was in a box sitting on... I crawled under the table and lifted the elephant out of the box. Yes, there was the missing copy of A Pictorial History of Greater Stonewall. Well, I'll be damned. That wasn't me, and it wasn't Ed. I froze. What are you doing in my booth, Ed? It was Nilda. She had a flashlight trained on him. I stayed where I was, out of sight under the table. I thought you left when Margaret did. I came back to lock up my books, he said, getting to his feet. Got a little disoriented in the dark. Well, you got a little disoriented with those books, too, didn't you? Bunch of crap, she jeered. I felt craven not helping Ed out, but as long as Nilda didn't know I was hiding there with her loot, maybe he could waltz his way out and I could sashay after him when the coast was clear. I called the cops, said Ed. So much for waltzing out. Am I supposed to be scared? I'm a businesswoman. You're the local crackpot. Who do you think they're going to believe? Face reality. I'm leaving. She meant the caustic pep talk for Ed, but it hit me right between the eyes. Hold it, Nilda, I said, scrambling out from under the table. Ed is not a crackpot. I'm a businesswoman, and you're a thief. I had a Zudu elephant in each hand to prove it, and shook them at her. And the cops will be plenty interested to see what else you've got stashed away here. The lights came on. Authoritative voices and solid footsteps made their way toward us. Nilda turned and sprinted, but Ed stuck his foot out just in time. Watch your step, darlin', he said. Ed Tidwell, a hero? You're right, I don't believe it. Bitsy, my constant and unrelenting sister, was waiting for me on the steps when I got home. Every word is true, darlin', I said, using Ed's endearment to good effect on her. It did interesting things to her eyebrows. She trailed me inside and upstairs as I shed layers on my way to the shower. My clothes and possibly my skin, hair, teeth, and bones had absorbed more of the essence of Ed than I would have thought possible. Bitsy, give me 10 minutes in the shower and then I will explain all, I said, closing the bathroom door in her face. Why don't you go make some cocoa? It was more like 15 minutes later, wrapped in my big blue bathrobe and still toweling my hair, that I joined her in the kitchen. And Leona, I discovered as I emerged from the towel. They were sipping cocoa. Bitsy eyed me over the rim of her mug, as though seeing something more exotic than a Zudu elephant. Leona was finishing the crossword puzzle I'd been saving for bedtime. So let me get this straight, Bitsy said. This customer of yours, Willie or Nilly or... Nilda. She took the elephants, and she's responsible for the thefts at the cemetery, and she stole Bud Bowman's garden gnome? And she helped herself regularly to my books, including the pictorial history. She shoplifted as many books as she ever bought, I said, helping myself to the cocoa and leaning against the kitchen counter. And it's no wonder the books she brought in for trade looked so good, because she stole them from someone else in the first place. She's been a one-woman crime wave, keeping 2 flea market booths in 2 separate towns stocked. The one here with stuff she picked up over in Bristol, and the one in Bristol with stuff she stole here. And Ed's the hero of the hour. I don't see how you figure that, Bitsy said. He's practically a Boy Scout, Bitsy, prepared for every contingency. Flashlight, cell phone, who knows what else he keeps in those handy pockets of his. What do you suppose they mean by triple time tripping, and what's an eight-letter word for it? Leona asked. Fandango, I said, twirling, then doing a little two or maybe a three-step over to the table. Tripping the light fantastic. Come to think of it, that's how Ed caught Nilda. He's pretty handy with his feet, too. Nonsense, Bitsy said. Bitsy, dear, that's hardly charitable of you. You weren't there this evening, Leona said. I mean, I thought Fandango meant nonsense, she smiled sweetly. Like some stories. Why, I believe you're right, dear. And, Margaret, you say we'll get our Zudu back? Eventually. Right now the elephants are evidence. That's fine, then. Now, what's a 10-letter word for booster, beginning with P and ending with F? Try two words. Petty thief. Of course. And there we are, she said, pocketing my pencil. All done. She folded the crossword and tossed it into the recycling bin. Bitsy, why don't you walk me home? Good night, Margaret, dear. Good night, Cousin Leona. By the way, Margaret, said, turning at the door, you didn't mention Ed's books. Were they worth looking at? Bitsy, they were indescribable, incredible, unbelievable. They were staggering. They left me breathless. They brought tears to my eyes. Don't make yourself dizzy, Margaret. Good night, Bitsy.
That was Molly McRae reading her story, Fandango by Flashlight, from the December 2005 issue of Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine. You can learn more about the magazine online at www.themysteryplace.com. Look for Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine at your newsstand, or you can download issues to read on your e-reader devices through Amazon.com, Sony eBookstore, and fictionwise.com.